it's working here. Sometimes technology just wants to be finicky. Let's see. Oh, yep, it's doing it now too. That's interesting. This is what it takes. This is what it takes.
We
want to sing real fast as I scroll through this. All right. Let's see if we can get this figured. All right. So here we go. If you will turn to Ezekiel chapter 18, please. Ezekiel chapter 18. And while you're turning to Ezekiel 18, I want us to consider the opening chapters of Genesis. As God is creating the universe and as he's establishing law and order, he establishes that he is the one in authority, in highest authority, and then man is the next in authority over the rest of creation. However, what we see is when man falls in chapter 3, there's this reversal of order. There is a serpent that causes man's downfall to distrust God and try to take authority away from God. And so the Bible is sort of about trying to get back to that moment in Eden, where God is the one at the pinnacle of authority, and then man is responsible to God and to his authority. But one of the interesting moments of the Bible is when God decides to fight fire with fire. And sometimes God has to, he has to change what he has established for us in order to accomplish his own will. And that might sound a little strange at first, but I think you'll understand what I mean here. But when we look at the sacrifice of Jesus, we'll start to notice that the truth, as God has established, is actually going to end up being turned on its head when it comes to Jesus' own sacrifice. So we're going to start in Ezekiel chapter 18 in verse 20. The person who sins will die. The son will not bear the punishment for the father's iniquity, nor will the father bear the punishment for the son's iniquity. The righteousness of the righteous will be upon himself, and the wickedness of the wicked will be upon himself. This is what God had established. This was the truth that God had established. The guilty are punished and the innocent are safe. That's the way things ought to be. The problem is sometimes the innocent die. And this is one of those times where God said, you know what? We can't help man unless we change. Unless we change this moment right here. The innocent have to die instead of the guilty. And this was something that he tried to help the Israelites understand by sacrificing animals. Animals that don't know right from wrong. They don't know good from evil. They don't have the capacity that we have. They weren't made in the image of God like we are. And yet, even though these animals have done nothing, they're the ones being slaughtered on the altar. And David Wildermuth a few weeks ago had a good talk up here at the Lord's Supper table about that. That what that should have done in the minds of the people is say, I don't want to have to sacrifice a lamb. I don't want to have to take another life for my sake. But God said, you know what, we're going to have to do that in the ultimate fashion. I am going to have to send my innocent son to die for the guilt of everyone else. And this is one of those realities where when we look at Ezekiel 18 verse 20, we want to follow through with that. But the at the end of the day, Jesus' salvation, the salvation that he offers, means that those who bear iniquity can actually be saved. Because that's the end problem with Ezekiel 18, is that the soul that sins, the person who sins, depending on how your version reads at the beginning of verse 20, the person who sins will die. That's all of us. That's all of us. The righteousness of the righteous means nothing when we have sin staining our soul. So if the soul who sins will die, if that's the truth that we have to live out, then none of us will go to our Father for eternity. So Jesus had to come and flip the script. The innocent have to die instead of the guilty. If you'll turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 24. Deuteronomy 24, verse 16, similar to Ezekiel 18, but a little bit different. Fathers shall not be put to death for their sons, nor shall sons be put to death for their fathers. Everyone shall be put to death for his own sin. It's very reminiscent of what we just read in Ezekiel 18. But I want to focus on this: fathers shall not be put to death for their sons. That's what Deuteronomy 24 tells us. Fathers and sons are not killed for each other's sin. The problem is, that's what had to happen with Jesus. John 1 tells us that Jesus is, in fact, the creator, that nothing was created without his input, without his hand in it. And so Jesus had to come as the creator and die for the sins of his creation. Now, we can throw around the word had for a moment. He had to. But he did. If Jesus didn't come and die for the sins of his creation, then there's not any salvation. As we spoke this morning, God is, he does want to show his children mercy, but there comes a time in which his justice must take a stand. There's time when his wrath must say enough is enough. And so to not offer an infinite being for infinite worth, right? Our souls, as Jesus put it, our soul is worth more than the entire world. One person's soul. Those who gain the whole world but lose their own soul, it's worthless to them. So can you imagine the billions of people that have lived on this planet since the beginning of time? Who can be sacrificed for all of that except God himself? Except such an infinite being that can overcome the infinite worth of our lives. And so fathers and sons may, under God's law, not be killed for each other's sons, but he has to take exception with himself and come and do that for us. And then earlier in chapter 18, Deuteronomy chapter 18, we're going to start reading in verse 9. When you enter the land which Yahweh your God gives you, you shall not learn to imitate the detestable things of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, one who uses divination, one who practices witchcraft, one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who casts a spell, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. For whoever does these things is detestable to Yahweh. And because of these detestable things, Yahweh your God will drive them out before you. You shall be blameless before Yahweh your God. God has always been very clear about this point. Human sacrifice is an abomination to him. those who offered their children on the fires of Molech, another god similar to Molech. That's the primary, one of the primary, but really the primary reason the Canaanites are all wiped out. God is punishing them for this very practice. The problem is, a human, as we know in the book of Hebrews, animals being sacrificed means nothing. An animal sacrifice is nowhere close to the worth of us. And therefore, the act of slaying an animal did not in and of itself provide salvation. It wasn't an equal exchange. So how do we have an equal exchange? Well, a human was then sacrificed. Human sacrifice might have been an abomination to God, but at the end, it was necessary for our salvation. I think that's a point that we sort of get lost on. What Jesus went through was human sacrifice. Now, the people doing it, they weren't sacrificing to their gods, but it was human sacrifice nonetheless. And can you imagine knowing for years that that was going to happen to you? Can you imagine the weight that had to have been on his shoulders just with that knowledge? He had human emotions. He had human characteristics. He wasn't just God come to lord it over us. He came to experience what we experience. And he came to show us that we can find forgiveness and perfection in our Father. But all the while, as he's talking to the Pharisees, he knows you are the very people that will slay me. As he's selecting his disciples, he points to Judas and says, "Come follow me." Can you imagine the weight of the sacrifice that is coming to you in the next few years? Or longer. I don't know how long Jesus had this knowledge. The weight of that sacrifice weighing down upon you. And of course, we think of human sacrifice in the same way that God does. But it was necessary for your salvation. We talk about blood. We'll take fruit of the vine. We might even describe the crucifixion. But I don't think it impacts us on the level that it should. You are why Jesus was on that cross. And of course, when I say you, I'm talking to myself as well. I put him on that cross too. Have you ever thought about it as human sacrifice? When everything is upside down, sometimes you have to turn it upside down again to get it right side up. And that's what God had to do for you and me. The innocent had to die for the guilty. The creator had to die for his creation. And that had to have been done by human sacrifice. The thing that boggles my mind is how little credit the world gives God for what he did. And for what he does every day. God has to make difficult decisions every millisecond. He has the weight of the world and the weight of the future of that world on him at all times. And sometimes God has had to make choices that I can't imagine making, like sending his son, a fellow being of God, to the cross, and had to sit there and watch it happen. Not do anything about it, knowing full well that it's what's best. And can you imagine how many times Jesus might have felt a lash and wondered if this was really what's best? For one single moment in the Garden of Gethsemane, at least, we know Jesus had that. Let this cup pass from me. I've had people try to say, oh, Jesus is asking for it to be over quickly. No, that's not what that means. He said, you know, if we could just skip over me and do this another way, that'd be great. Can you imagine God himself looking at God the Father and going, maybe we could come up with another plan? I'm so glad God did that, and he hasn't asked me to do that. Because sadly, I would not have made the same decision that Jesus did. We forget what God has to do. When we were talking this morning, we talked about all of what saves us, the whole machine of our salvation. And God is in the middle of all of it. All three beings of God were the first three things that we talked about. And then his grace was yet another, and his word was yet another. Our actions, our obedience, and our faith were there, but it was merely reflections of God. And that's why I have any part to play in my salvation. It's because I'm reflecting God's glory. God did everything for me. Do we give him that credit? We talk about waking up every morning and feeling thankful. Do you? Or is that just a cliche that you use? Do you tell God enough? I know we said earlier, is the word enough, does that belong in who we are as Christians? We're never going to do enough. But have you told God how much you appreciate him? Because let me tell you, I don't think that prayer is going to be a 5-minute prayer. I think that prayer is going to have to take the rest of your life. To thank God for everything he did for you. And he did all of this so that we can be with him. That kind of love boggles our minds. I think intellectually we think we understand it. We don't understand that. We don't understand what it took for God to make it possible for us to be with him. Do we treat our spouses that way? Do we treat our fellow Christians that way? Do we treat God that way? We're supposed to have a relationship with God. Relationships are supposed to be a two-way street. And God said, you know what? I'll go 99. All I want you to do is come 1%. It's nowhere close to a two-way street with God. God put the bar on the ground and said, all you got to do is step over it. And we said, you know what? I think I'll dig under the bar that you've set. Do you realize what God has done for you? I hope you do. If you didn't tonight, I hope you have a better appreciation for it now. God has done everything for you and asks a pittance in return. It's the least we can do to tell him how much we love him, how thankful we are for him, how much that we're going to show others the love that he's shown us. All of these things are the least we can do. I heard Penn Jillette say this one time. I think I've said this up here before, but just in case, I thought it was pretty good. He was talking about, if you don't know Penn Jillette, he's the half of the Magician's duo, Penn and Teller, very militant atheist, and he was talking about a props master that he had at one of his shows, and the man said, I know how you feel about this stuff, but I have a New Testament here, a pocket New Testament. I wanted to give it to you. And he said, I've never seen a man do that. Most people, they know how I feel, and they steer clear of the subject. He said, but that's when I realized, if you truly believe Christianity and what it teaches, how much do you have to hate someone to not tell them about their potential salvation? And the problem is, we walk by people every day and we make up excuses why it's not good enough for us to go and tell them about the love of God that he showed us. And then we wonder whether or not God has a relationship with us or not. As we go about our day, whenever you wake up, whenever you drive to work, while you're sitting at work, while you're having lunch, while you're driving home, while you're spending time with your family, while you're playing games, while you're doing chores, as you're going to bed, are you talking to God? Are you telling him how much you love him and how grateful you are for him? Maybe you are sitting here saying, you know what, I've never had a moment to have that relationship with God. And now's the time to take care of that, because God has shown you immense and infinite love. Sometimes that's hard to wrap our minds around, and that's okay. But why don't you come forward and show him how much he means to you? Because he's done that for you. He put his son on a cross to show you how much he loves you. And so you should take advantage of our opportunity and come and show God just how much you love him. Take advantage of this opportunity as we stand and as we sing.